Gardner, and welcome to The Seed Word Radio, the podcast for cancer-y people who want real conversations about cancer. I'm your host, Helen King. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts. Hello, my cancer-y friends. It is so good to be back with you. I've been on a break, but I have spent the time recording and finding guests for the next couple of months. The episodes you'll be hearing will have more of a focus on how we heal and recover from cancer, and along with the usual personal stories that I know that you guys will love. But I wanted to explore some of the different ideas and techniques of how we look after ourselves after a cancer diagnosis. I think that the post-treatment period can be quite tough. I know for me it has at times been tougher than the actual treatment, and it hasn't always been clear on what do we do to help heal our bodies. When I say heal, what I mean is how do we nourish our bodies, our mind, our emotions, and our spirit. So those are some of the topics that we are going to be exploring over the next couple of months. If you've got any ideas, or you know there's a particular topic that you would like me to cover, send me an email or get in contact with me on Facebook or Instagram. All of those details are in the show notes. And a little bit of housekeeping before I introduce my guest. If you haven't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you have an iPhone. If you give the C Word Radio a rating and leave a review, this helps more people discover the show. And if you have an Android, you can do the same by following me on Spotify. And I have had such nice feedback from the listener survey, and the general consensus is that you like it, especially my honesty and humour. Thank you. I'm an awkward Kiwi, so yeah, taking compliments is not always comfortable, but I'm so pleased that you guys are enjoying what I'm creating. There is still time to fill out the survey, and it shouldn't take more than 5 minutes, and you will go in the draw to win a beautiful care box from Cancer Care Box. All that information will be in the show notes, and it's on my social media. If you have some time, please fill out that survey. It just helps me know what you guys are interested in. It helps me know what I could be doing, and you have given me some really great ideas, so thank you. We're carrying on with a discussion about how cancer impacts fertility and parenthood today. My guest, Talia Cooper, was still in newborn bliss when she was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2019. At just 30, Talia was entering into a new phase of life after spending a few years in New York with her partner, Jesse. Neither of them expected to be dealing with cancer and a newborn. And a quick warning, if you have kids in the room, just pop a pair of headphones on, because there is a little bit of swearing in this episode. This is Talia's story. Thank you so much for joining me, Talia. It's really cool to have you in the studio today.
No worries. Good to be here.
And it's cool to be in the studio. It's been a little while since we've been in Planet FM. Usually I am set up at home hoping my dogs don't bark.
Won't have that issue here.
No, not at all. So it was quite funny. We were having a cuppa in the tea room before, and we chatting away openly about cancer, as you do with a fellow cancer-y person, and the man who came in pipes up, geez, you're
depressed. This isn't even that bad.
It was so funny because it kind of struck me that, you know, this is really normal for us to talk so
openly and honestly, and I guess for others it's quite a taboo subject.
Yeah.
In a way, and especially when you're talking about death and dying, which we were talking about.
Which we were being quite honest about the reality of a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I love being able to sit down and talk to people, because I don't think until you've had cancer, you don't realise how encompassing it can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All-encompassing.
Absolutely.
All parts of your life affected.
Yes. So let's go back in time a little bit. What we were talking about first was that it was one of those moments where you're like, that's a year after me. Mine was my right breast. Let's go back. So it was June 2019, and you tell us,
Paint the picture. What was going on?
What was going on? I was in newborn bliss. So I just had a baby. His name is Navy. Yes, like the colour. So I felt the lump when I was pregnant. I say to myself it was 6 months along, but in all honesty, I think I was earlier. I've just convinced myself that I've said 6 months because it was that long that I didn't get it checked. So I felt the lump when I was pregnant, but I think quite naturally, cancer is the last thing from your mind. I had a really beautiful pregnancy. I was like a textbook glowing person. I loved it. I carried really beautifully. And yeah, I had a really positive birth experience. And I did this thing called postpartum confinement. Mm. A lot of people in the East do it. So you just take the first 4 to 6 weeks really slow. I didn't rush out. I didn't go to cafes. I didn't go to the mall. It was just me and my baby. And we just took it slow. And when I was in the hospital and my milk was coming in, my husband felt the lump. And wow. The weird thing is like, I knew about the lump. I'm a smart girl. I had it on my notes to talk to my midwife. I'm very close with my mum. And I just didn't tell anyone. It's so weird. Like, I went through all my other side effects of pregnancy, but I just didn't tell anyone about the lump. And to this day, I don't know why. I don't know if I was protecting myself. I do genuinely think cancer just wasn't on my radar. My body was changing anyway. Mm. My milk was coming in and colostrum and all that. So I had this really positive birth experience. My husband felt the lump. The midwife was there and she was like, you know, you need to go to the GP and get that checked out. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. You know. But then we got a newborn and trying to leave the house is impossible and even having the confidence to do it. So it wasn't until his 6-week immunizations that we managed to get to the GP. And while we were there, I mentioned to my GP, oh yeah, I've got this lump. And she felt it and I could see her face drop and she was very, I got a stern telling off. I should have come in here earlier. Why didn't I? You need to go and get this checked. And I was like, okay, sure. Like, again, I'm sure it's nothing. And a few weeks later, I went into the ultrasound at Green Lane Hospital. And my son was only 10 weeks old and I was still breastfeeding. And again, you know, we're new parents. I'm not very confident yet in going out into the real world. So I left my husband in the car and I was like, I'll be back in 10, 15 minutes. Don't worry. 2 hours later. And all I could think about was my baby screaming in the car without the boob to settle him.
Yeah.
And my husband freaking out. And I'm here in this damn waiting room by myself, not even realizing the enormity of what was ahead of me. So I went in for like a ultrasound. And then the doctor was a little bit concerned. So he took me next door for a mammogram. Still, I'm like, okay, whatever. And then back for another ultrasound, back for another mammogram, back into the room. And then I got a biopsy. And I was by myself during this whole time. I had no one, no support people. And I was still like, what is happening? All I was my baby. And then he took me out the back to look at the scans. And I don't think he could actually, like, he knew it was cancer, but he couldn't say it.
Yeah.
So there I am being, oh, so if it's not benign and it's not a cyst, what is it? She was like, cancer? And he was like, you know, be prepared. And I was like, what?
Wow.
What? And then after 2 hours, I finally walked out. My husband picked me up in the car and I told him to get out of the car and to give me a hug. And I said into his ear, I think I've got cancer. Wow. And then just, I don't even remember the next couple of days. I got a call that night from my GP confirming that it was cancer. I don't remember telling my mum. I don't remember telling my dad. I don't remember telling my siblings. But the next couple of days, it was really traumatic telling everyone I loved that I had cancer. It was really this out-of-body experience. And I thought I was lying and I was causing all this pain to everyone I love. And it was just crazy. And I remember my GP telling me, on Monday, you've got your consultation where you'll find out all the results. Use this time, the next 5 days, to make memories. And I was just like, holy fuck.
Sorry. You can spare this.
Sorry. And I was just, what? What? And yeah. Luckily, I was at a point in my life where I loved my life. I was very content. I didn't need to go out and make new memories. I did that every day. So I carried on with my plans. And Monday morning was the day I found out my fate, essentially. Sorry, that was a very long-winded answer.
Because I really relate to that in terms of that window where you've had your biopsy and you're waiting for the results because you don't know. You have no control over what that result is. Yeah. And I know, I say it all the time, don't Google, but of course you Google and you look at, well, what are the stages? What will it mean? And will I be relieved if it's this, that, or the other? And then when you get those results and finally know what you're dealing with, it's a really, it's a strange sensation. And I liken it to, I guess liken to is not the right word. I remember knowing that life had changed and it was never going to go back to normal, that it was almost like I had entered in this different universe. The world is going on around you and you're all of a sudden
your
in this
world
place.
Upside down.
Yeah.
I was kind of the opposite in the sense. I think because I was so wrapped up in this newborn, you know, becoming a new mother, my brain literally just couldn't comprehend, and even to this day, the enormity of what I was about to go through and what I'm going through. And I think because I was so far removed from cancer, I just didn't know. Well, for example, my mum works at the hospice.
Oh, wow.
She's a social worker. So she sees death and dying every day. Her best friend had breast cancer 20 years ago, and she's still here today, which is amazing. And a couple of her other friends have had breast cancer. So, I mean, my mum has been incredible on this journey. She's just been my pillar of support. And whatever fear she had, I never felt it, but she's been amazing. But for her, she would have an understanding of what lay ahead of me with the baby.
And I think that what I imagine and I think about, because my mother had endometrial cancer maybe 15 years ago, and my head at the time, you instantly go, oh, my God, is my mum going to die?
Yeah, death.
Because cancer, death.
Completely.
And I kind of knew that as a younger person, it was going to be aggressive because I had worked in health insurance and I had kind of seen different people needing cover for cancer treatment. And I just noticed the difference to a younger person. Yeah. It's such a life-changing moment, I think, and for different reasons.
Yes.
And it is this time of year is when it was all going on for me. And I guess one of the reasons why I was really keen to talk to other people around fertility and motherhood and things is that I remember when they said, okay, well, it's HER2 positive, there's no hormone involvement. Mm. My relief was, oh, thank God, that means I can still have children because I hadn't had any. What was that like for you in terms of being diagnosed with cancer, knowing that you'd had your first child? What did that mean then for your fertility? What were the considerations?
Well, when we first met with the surgeon, or in that those first couple of weeks, every decision that I made in terms of my chemo, surgery, whatever, was so I could carry another baby. Mm. That was important to me. That was my priority. I wanted to breastfeed when I do have another baby. So all those decisions were based on that. In terms of fertility preservation, everything happened really, really quickly. Mm. From what I recall, no one came to me about fertility preservation. I remember one day being, holy heck, my family's not complete. I need to do IVF or fertility preservation.
Yeah.
So as I recall, I remember going to them being, what do I do? What do we need to do? So I got referred to Fertility Associates at Green Lane Hospital. I was all public and I've had an incredible experience going public.
Yeah.
Which I'm quite lucky from the sounds of it because I don't have much to complain about. And I just had this incredible nurse down there and she just made it so much more possible. So I ended up having this emergency meeting with the head doctor or something. She wasn't very warm. I remember that. Life-changing, and I'm probably just another person coming through her doors. So time pressure was massive. In 12 days, I had to start chemo, but I needed 14 days to do the egg harvesting. And it was so stressful. And I had to get approval from my oncologist, my surgeon, my this, my that. You know, and I'm working in a very short period of time anyway. And you're like, oh my God, am I going to die if I don't get, I need another 24 hours. Is that enough time or am I going to die? Is it too late?
Yes.
You know, but I was like, no, this is important. I've got to do this. So I went in and I had to fucking pay $11,000 overnight.
Overnight.
I couldn't start until I had paid $11,000. I think it was $10,000 up front and then another $1,000 for something else. And that, at the time, you know, you deal with it. But now I'm just, fuck you.
Yeah.
Who's to say that my family's not complete with one child? I didn't choose to have cancer. Like, how do you determine who's worthy and not worthy of going through fertility preservation? Mm. And again, I'm privileged. What about those who couldn't afford it? No. I managed to rally money through my family overnight. What about those who can't? That's not fair. So yeah, I want to fight that. It's not cool.
It's really interesting, I think, that idea of who gets to decide who deserves it, because I was really lucky. Mine got pushed through because I was eligible for public funding because I hadn't had children. Mm. I was under 40. But my BMI was out. So technically I was deemed too fat to be able to, be able to have fertility treatment. But mine got pushed through kindly. And I think that is one of the challenging things, because when you're put in that position where you feel like, well, your life is in a weird balance of you've got this, aggressive disease that you have to have this treatment for, but then you're having to also make these decisions of what do I want in the future, but do I have a future?
It's a mindfuck.
It is, absolutely.
I remember we were trying to decide on what type of surgery I was going to have. Was I going to have a single, a double, or was I DEP, whatever. And I remember looking at mum being like, can you just make the decision for me? I can't even decide what to eat for dinner or if I want a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. How am I supposed to make these life-changing decisions when your world is crumbling around you while also trying to look after a baby? It was just that time pressure to make these massive decisions.
Yeah.
And literally you've got a day to make it, if that.
It's insane, isn't it? And I think, I'm thinking back now and I remember that consultation with my oncologist, that first meeting, because I'd had my mastectomy and so he had all the histology and the report, and I spent 3 hours with him and it was sort of afternoon into the evening, and it really was, these are the steps, and all of a sudden your life is broken down into statistics. Yeah. If you do this chemo protocol, this is what I think you should do. This for me, with needing Herceptin. If Herceptin didn't exist, I'd have a 50% chance, and all of that stuff. And then throwing into that, do you want children? Yeah, probably. I've been with my partner for 6 months, and so I remember he came with me to the fertility associates, and it was really awful because you're having to say to this person who's been with you for 6 months, because the fertility doctor said it is much better if you do embryos.
Oh, that's a whole other thing.
And that was the whole other gamble of, do I do that with this person? Because I knew that statistically relationships don't last cancer. Mm. The stress of a person going through chemo or cancer treatment. And so we just had to make this huge gamble and go, okay, we'll do embryos. And even that process, I shouldn't laugh at it now.
My husband's traumatised. We were together 14 years at the time. He was not happy.
You can't do it at home.
In the store, and then he walks out with this little pot and asks, bro, I'm going through all of this stuff, Jessie. Yeah, you can do this. And I'm the one getting prodded and with all these needles. He hates needles and he needs to go get a blood test and he's nearly fainting. And I'm like, honestly, you have one job to do. Come on, I'm doing everything else.
And then my partner was so proud that when the report came back that he had strong, healthy.
Fantastic.
So funny.
It was very funny. My husband was just mortified and I was, oh, come on. I remember being in the waiting room because there were all these other couples there trying to get IVF. And here I am with a newborn baby in my arms. They must have been looking at me being, what is going on here? You've got a baby. Yeah. Why are you here? And I was like, only you knew.
I know. It's just funny you say that, because I bumped into a woman I know. And it wasn't until a little bit later where I started really sharing about my cancer journey and she clicked, oh my God, that's why you were there. Yes. It is so weird to think that we had to make those decisions in that kind of rapid fire way. But I was thinking back to what you were saying before, you had a newborn baby. Talk to me a bit about mothering during chemo and all of these things. I mean, you mentioned before that Navy is being raised by a village, which is amazing. Mm. But talk to me a bit about being a mum while this is happening.
That's a big question.
Big question, sorry. I'm just dropping in there.
It's all right. I think the first thing to acknowledge was that my motherhood was ripped away. And it really was in every essence of of that. Despite not getting my lump checked when I was pregnant and this fact that it did not spread to my lymph nodes, and I will never understand why, and I'll always be grateful. I'm just thankful I had a beautiful pregnancy, a positive birth experience, and a really slow, gentle start together. And I think that did actually really set us off for getting through the next chapter. How was it? It was fucking hard, but I was okay because I accepted what was happening. I surrendered to it. I went with the flow, and I had the most incredible support system.
Yeah.
This is where I get teary. And family to help me, and community. But, you know, your family is literally on the battlefront with you. And at the time, me and my husband and our son were living at home with my mum, with my brother and his partner, who I'm very close with. And then my in-laws are literally 1.3 kilometres down the road. And I'm really close with my mother-in-law. Without my family, I have no idea how I would have got through that. I don't think I would have recovered so well. My mum was an incredible emotional support. My brother was amazing. He fed us, made sure we were all fed every night. My sister-in-law and my mother-in-law helped take care of my baby. And then my poor husband tried to go between me and our son, but he was really struggling. He found it incredibly hard. So back to the motherhood. I think probably where it all starts was when I got diagnosed and I had to get the fertility preservation. So we went in very suddenly for this appointment, and I was preparing to stop breastfeeding when chemo started in a couple of weeks. And that was massive. I was trying to get my head around that. I walked into this appointment and she told me to stop breastfeeding that night, that I needed to start first thing tonight.
Wow.
And I was just, what? What? And when I went into motherhood, I was pretty chilled about everything. There was only a few things that I wanted. I wanted my son to love the water. I hoped that he would. I wanted him to, all those other things. But the other thing that I wanted for me was I wanted to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months. That was my one thing. I was whatever about everything else. I had quite a few people tell me, put him on the bottle, pump, you can go for coffee. And I was like, no, this is my season. I want to breastfeed. This is what I wanted. And then to have that ripped away from me was more traumatic than my diagnosis and everything else I went through. It was horrendous. So when I was told to stop breastfeeding that night, that was the one and only time I said no to everything. I was just, I can't, you've got to give me 24 hours. And it was awful. And then again, you know, I had to go through the oncologist, the surgeon, because now we've already delayed it 24 hours. From chemo, we've already delayed chemo 24 hours for the egg harvesting. Now we had to delay another 24 hours because I needed time to stop breastfeeding. So it was traumatic. But my husband and my baby were just amazing. Navy went off the breast cold turkey.
Oh, wow.
And he took a little bit of time to get on the bottle, but he took it within a couple of times. And it was weird because that last feed that I had with him, he knew that we were finishing. It was weird because normally I'd kind of do the last feed, put him to sleep, and he was really good. He would go to sleep. But that night I had gone upstairs to start injecting myself and I heard him cry and I was like, what? So I went back down and fed him, which I never did. Then I go upstairs and I'm getting ready to like inject myself, cried again. And I was like, what? Go back down. And he knew that was our last feed. And then I went back up. And then I started injecting myself. And that was the start of that next chapter. So now I'm fucking got the impending chemo. I've just had a baby. Now let's try and make another baby. I'm already full of needle marks. So now I'm having to inject myself every night. My husband can't handle it. So he's not even with me. I'm with my mum.
Yeah.
And now I'm having to inject myself for 2 weeks. And I'm having to go dry. So I'm having to pour all this liquid gold out down the sink. That was really traumatic. But the most traumatic was the following night, and my husband was trying to give Navy the bottle, and I don't know, he started crying or something, and I kind of went downstairs to the bedroom to help, quote unquote, help. I don't know why. I think I was just, as a mother, you just want to be there. And I shouldn't have been there. It was horrendous. Yeah. And I went in and Navy's screaming and I can't, it was, I had this drug that he couldn't have, or we were this drug to each other, and I couldn't feed him, but I had all this milk and he could smell it, and aww, it was awful. Yeah. And then, so Navy's screaming in Jesse's arms and Jesus, get out. And I was like, no, no. And he was like, get out, Talia. And I'm literally on the bed wailing. It was so horrific. And he was like, get out. And I was like, no. And then I ended up going out and he ended up closing the door. And I just remember falling outside the door, just, I can't even explain it. It's like what you see in the movies, the despair, the utter despair and grief. And I remember my family watching a movie upstairs so they couldn't hear me screaming. And, you know, they were just watching this movie and there was just this scene below them. That was probably my lowest point.
Mm.
And then a couple of days later, I ended up in bloody hospital for a kidney infection. So that was my first time away from my son. And I just finished breastfeeding and that was pretty horrific. That was shit. It was kind of good because in the sense, like when I came back from hospital, I was there for a few days and that was the first time away from Navy. So I just did video calls. He never came to the hospital with me with all the bugs and everything. And he... It had been a week since I had stopped breastfeeding and I wasn't able to give him the bottle because I had the milk supply still. So by the end of the week, I had gone dry and I was kind of ready to start feeding him again from the bottle. So that was my massive loss in terms of motherhood. But a way I was able to get something back and to control the situation was I kept him on donated breast milk.
Oh, wow.
Which was incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful. Actually, my last feed was him 3 months to the day. So I achieved that, 3 months of breastfeeding. And then until he was 6 months, I had him exclusively on donated breast milk from my best friends, from girls I hadn't talked to since high school, from complete strangers, from my coffee group. It was this huge operation. And just all these generous mamas pumping and feeding, like literally growing my baby.
Mm.
And it was just wonderful. And it was like when I had just all these horrendous losses, it was really beautiful to see that. And I managed to keep him on breast milk till he was 1 year old. So I had him half breast milk and then half formula until then. That was a really cool achievement for me.
I remember someone saying or reading early on, you never know how much you are loved until you have cancer. Like that's one of those examples, is that people really pull together in different ways. For me, it was food and cleaning and things, because that's what I needed. You needed to be fed. And I think sometimes people can be so good.
Cancer has been shit, but like there is so much to be grateful for. I have seen so much kindness and generosity.
I feel even 3 years on, my body hasn't recovered
from
I mean, I have not had children. I can only sort of assume that actually pregnancy does take a toll on your body. Mm. And
why I ended up having a cesarean as well.
Oh my God. Yeah.
My body has been through the ringer and I've put on 15 kilos. And when I find myself looking at my body and it's tough sometimes, but look what it's gone through.
Mm.
Would you be saying this to a friend who's gone through what you've gone through? No, you wouldn't, so don't say it to yourself. But
I have too. I didn't
put self-compassion
on any way all through treatment.
Oh, lucky.
But it's being afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
And it's same, probably about 15 kilos or so. And then we had the pandemic last year and all of those things. And I guess at the moment it really is that time of reflection and thinking back. And I think one of the things that I feel a lot of loss around is just my sense of self.
Mm.
Like I really have no idea who I am. And even down to what do I like wearing. And I haven't had a reconstruction. And I wish I'd been given the option to go flat because I would have taken it. But just trying to navigate this new body, let alone the weight gain, but just the changes in my body from having a breast removed, having lymphedema, having those things. I think
losing your hair.
Losing your hair and your hair not being the same. And I keep noticing that we have the same skin.
I was very grateful, but I hated it.
Yeah.
Couldn't touch it.
No. And so I know that actually people aren't perfect. I just feel sometimes that is a huge adjustment that people don't talk about so much, that actually it's kind of, you give your body over to medicine in a way from having cancer.
Like it wasn't your choice.
No, and you have no agency. Yeah. You have no control over what's happening. And then you get spit out the other end.
You're like, you're on your own now. You're on your life.
I joke about this so much, but I always remember my oncologist, because he was such a dry man. I loved him, but he was very dry, saying, and now we just encourage you to go and live your life.
Thanks.
And I'm like, how do I do that? I feel like I've just crawled out of a nuclear wasteland, and you're telling me to go, you know, I'm traumatized. Even me. And I still don't know what that means. Yeah. And I still, life has not been the same and things have changed. And I wish I had answers for stuff for people who might be listening who are in that, you know, space. But
one day at a time. One hour at a time.
I feel sometimes, I mean, for me especially, that actually the aftermath has been harder.
And I will always be grateful for my nurse, my breast nurse. She always told me from the beginning, be aware that afterwards it's a wobbly time. Mm. So I was really prepared for that in a sense. And I had all my support systems in place. I had my physio. I had my psychologist at Cancer Society. I had my breast nurse contact. I have an amazing nurse at the New Zealand Breast Cancer Foundation. So I was really lucky and kind of put those systems in place because she was be aware. And I think for me, what you're saying about life will never be the same, you kind of have this, your life before cancer and your life after cancer. Mm-hmm. So you know you got that pivotal time. But for me, I used to live in New York. Insane, extravagant lifestyle. My husband's a music producer, DJ, so I was playing at all the top festivals in America. So we were on tour and it was wild.
Yeah.
It was wild. And then we come home, we live at my mum's house, we have no income, I have a baby, and then I get cancer. So in terms of that identity, it's interesting. I think probably being a mother or having my son has given me that purpose. So I don't feel defined. I feel defined by cancer more than being a mother.
Wow.
For sure. I know I'm a mother and I feel like a mother, but I never had that whole like domestic mother, traditional housewife. I didn't do that shit. I was fucking trying to survive. I'm not super defined by that. And I'm definitely trying to find my way out of this and trying to find meaning and purpose. But I guess my son was my saving grace in that sense. You know, he got me up every day. And even now he's kind of my purpose. I don't really have a career per se. I don't know where I was going with that, but
I get it though. I really do. I've been thinking a lot recently. I think it's just that season at the moment for me is that reflection, and I've really struggled to work since. And I was the high achiever. I was the person who pushed myself. I constantly burnt. I'm always being all or nothing. It has, you know, going full tit. And but I feel my body just went, no, you cannot do this. And I can't even imagine. I used to be able to go to the gym every day. There's none of that happens anymore.
I looked
anymore.
Through the clothes racks at the store and my arms hurt.
Yeah.
They hurt when I'm shifting through the clothes. I'm, this is ridiculous. This is bullshit. Yeah. And I think that's been one of my biggest struggles. Not so much my scars and the weight gain. They're shit, but actually scars, I don't really mind.
Yeah.
But it's been the weakness in my body and not feeling strong. That's been my biggest struggle.
Me too. Yeah. It's really, really challenging because I think some people are amazing and they have a different experience. Mm. They're able to exercise a lot and that's fantastic.
We're dying on the couch. Yeah. Like, oh.
That wasn't my experience. No. And I go through these cycles having just to be accepting of this is where I'm at.
Yeah.
I think for me, I joke about because we have dogs. And they're kind of my grief dogs.
Yeah. Oh, they're therapy pups. That's real. It's a thing. They get you up every day. They give you that comfort.
They totally are. And they're just menaces. And I just feel those sorts of things have been that sort of, that saving grace. Because you do. You need that thing that's going to get you out of bed because it could no longer be work for me. It's no longer, I'm going to the gym and this is my goal.
Just getting out of bed and feeding the dogs, that's a goal.
We're going for a walk.
And that's so understandable.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I feel people that I've, you know, come across in my time of being in the cancer community, and people do talk about even 10 years down the track, this still really impacts me. Mm. And I wouldn't have known that before I had cancer. And I feel it's not maybe it's just not good for marketing. Once you've had cancer, things could be really shit for a while.
That's a big part of coming out the other side, for me especially, is accepting that cancer is now always going to be a part of my life. Mm. And as the years go by, it won't be as big. Other things will fill that space. Mm. But I will always have to tick that fucking box on the medical form saying that I've had cancer.
Yeah.
And that seems so trivial, but that's shit.
Yeah.
And always having to be aware and, you know, having your annual checkups. Mm-hmm. And I don't really get, quote unquote, scanxiety much. And I don't hold on to a lot of anxiety or fear around reoccurrence. Mm-hmm. Not quite sure why. Healthy coping mechanism. I don't know. It is what it is. But it will always be that every year I'm just going to be reminded, hey, we're going to go through this again. And it's pretty shit for being so young and having that for your whole life ahead of you.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we are hoping to do, we couldn't do the first IVF because I got a cough. Because I'd got tracking my normal cycle and then we're going to try an embryo implantation.
Exciting.
And maybe when this goes to air, we might have tried it.
Hang on, is this the same guy from... Yeah, so you're still together?
Yeah, his strong sperm.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness.
Yeah. But I feel the hardest thing is I'm 40, so I'll be 41 in December, and this wouldn't have been the way I'd chosen to do it. I know I was 37 when, you know, all of this happened, and it would still have probably been harder to get pregnant as a woman in her late 30s. But that would still have been a choice. It would have been, okay, well, this is the way it is, and it's maybe shit and all of those things. But I think when it's the cancer that actually you have to now wait 2 years because we can't risk you doing this because the, you know, cancer might come back. And even in the process of going, yeah, we'd like to do it now. So I can, the fertility doctor saying, okay, well, because I was due for my mammogram, she's like, just get that done first. And so there's always that kind of question mark and hanging of, in case the cancer comes back, is the cancer going to interfere with this?
Yeah.
And I still haven't had my blood test. I was meant to have a blood test over a month ago. And I hate needles before all the cancer, but now I just delay everything. Mm. And I think part of that is once you've had tests and they've not been good,
don't want to go through it again.
But I guess that was my very, very roundabout way of saying that I really relate when you talk about it's the choice that gets taken away of you are no longer choosing how this plays out. Because I know the chances of it being successful aren't in our favour, but there's obviously the chance. And so it just feels another thing that we're having to prepare ourselves for. Yeah.
And it's just one thing after another. That's the other thing. It's like, you know, I'm 2 years out and I'm still dealing with this stuff. And in terms of us having another child, it's going to be a very different experience from when Navy was conceived, which was naturally and straight away. And it was easy and really lucky. But this time I'm going to have to go to all my doctors. I'm going to have to try naturally for 6 months. And if not, do IVF. And then, but the biggest thing is weighing up the risk of all this. And that's hard because I'm kind of, I'll be fine. But then my logical brain is like, actually, you're at a higher risk. So it's weighing all that up. But I guess first and foremost, our marriage needs to get stronger because it's taken a toll. This experience, it's been really, 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 really hard on us. So we need to kind of get strong there before having another one. But then again, you're racing with this time.
Yes.
Because it's, okay, well, do we have another one if our marriage isn't strong enough? Because what if it's going to take so long, blah, blah, blah? Or do we wait? And then what if it's too late? And so now you've got all these other things to consider. And because my, is this double-edged sword, my cancer was hormone positive.
Yes.
So mine was pregnancy-related cancer. But then everything I've done and I've chosen to do with my surgeon and oncologist is so I can carry another baby. I had a single mastectomy so I can breastfeed. I had the DEP so I can still carry another child. But then it's like, hormone positive.
Have they said that the risk is higher?
I don't know higher per se, but because it's hormone positive. I'm going to say yes, but don't quote me on that. So it's like weighing it all up. And then, you could look into getting a surrogacy, which I believe my sister would actually, seriously. Thanks, sister. Maybe two of them, my other sister-in-law. But then someone told me recently, if you get a surrogate, you have to adopt your own child.
Thanks,
what
Vera.
The fuck? No one told me that while I was getting fertility preservation.
Yeah.
Oh, if you get a surrogate, you're going to have to adopt your own baby.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Excuse my language. And that's probably going to cost tens of thousands of dollars as well. That's not funded.
We have funny surrogacy laws, I think, in New Zealand.
Yeah, so what's that all about? I mean, I don't know. Time will tell.
So many things. I was thinking what you're saying before. I think the impact of cancer on our relationships is really, really hard. I mean, my partner and I, it was really, really rough. And then I think we've had these sort of moments of when things really come to a head. And so there was a time where he had to go get separate counselling and then I had to get separate counselling.
Yeah.
And then last year during COVID.
Oh, and then you throw in COVID.
And there was just more stuff that happened. And we had, again, we went and got couples counselling. And I think in a relationship, when you have had something really stressful, whether it is a cancer diagnosis or maybe you have had an infancy loss or you've had job losses and thing, any sort of stress added in, I think, to an intimate relationship is going to make it harder. And I think it's something with cancer that is...
just shakes everything.
It just shakes everything.
And you handle it in different ways. So me and my husband handle it in completely opposite ways. I was very open. I called on my people. I was, help me. Yeah. Well, he was, no, I'm fine. But he wasn't fine. And then he crashed.
Yes. That sounds familiar.
And that's the thing. He's not the only one, but it's, come on, talk about it. And then you'll be okay. But it's so hard for him to see that sometimes, I think. And yeah, it's very up and down. And then, you know, you throw in becoming a parent. You throw in this completely, I always say that we were, fiercely independent in New York.
Yeah.
We were fiercely independent. We did whatever we wanted, whoever we wanted. I'll be in Manhattan until 4 a.m. and he won't even call to see where I am. He's like, I trust you, you're fine. And then to come home and live with your parents, and then we had no income. We haven't had income for a couple of years. So you'd lose all of that. And then my husband's a DJ musician. You lose all, you know, the work with COVID. And you just, so many of those things all at one time. No wonder you're fucking struggling. No wonder you've got to this point where it's an absolute strain on your marriage. But you also need to get that external support. And we saw someone for a little bit. She was amazing. But then it was funded by the ADHB. We ran out of sessions, which really sucked. And I've tried to find other ways to see her, but there aren't any, which I'm really gutted about. And I think it's time we need to see someone else again. But need to figure that out.
I think that this is one of the things that I try and get across to, you know, people call them cancer muggles, is that it is hugely stressful having cancer. And I think that at different ages we have different stresses in terms of how it impacts our lives, which is why I've been talking to other younger women because I'm facing the fertility stuff at the moment. I've wanted to talk to other people about it. And so that's the main pressure, is on the relationship, being able to work, fertility. And I've noticed with older people there are different stresses.
Yeah.
And I feel this is where you can see the giant lack in support, is that I don't feel there is enough structure to help us reintegrate, no matter what stage you are in life when cancer happens.
Which is why I'm part of that focus group.
Yeah.
Try and find the gaps and see what it can be. I would say I'm quote unquote one of the lucky ones. I have gone out to search for those support systems.
Yeah.
But they're not in place. They haven't come to me.
No.
We're such a unique age group, and just so many things affect you, and like intimacy.
Mm.
You're going into fucking menopause.
Remember when
no one talks about it.
What?
I was just, is this going to get any better? I'm doomed. This is awful. And that's really important. And that's not really talked about openly.
No, my oncologist did not tell me about that.
No, neither did mine. Oh.
Which doesn't surprise me.
No. It's like, then you got to figure it out and you're like, what is happening? I'm never going to have sex again. But yeah, it's just so many levels and so many, just every single aspect of your life it affects. It affects your social life. You've got to be mindful not to compare yourself to other people's journeys and chapters. But you do feel, what the fuck has happened the last 2 years? And my husband's literally trying to survive mentally. I'm trying to survive physically. We're literally trying to survive while our friends have like bought houses and they've had another child, and that's really lovely. And I don't want to mitigate that, and they've got that, they'll be having their own challenges as well. Mm. But we're literally been trying to survive the last couple of years.
And it's a really, really tough place to be, and I relate with it.
Yeah, and then you try and come out of it, and you're like, what do I do? Help me.
Yeah.
How do I do this?
And I don't have the answers. No. I wish I did. Oh, yeah. My God. Talia, thank you so much for sharing your story.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure. And I feel the more we can talk about these things,
the less you feel alone.
The less we feel alone. And maybe we can find answers for people.
We'll make changes in the system.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword.
this type of celebration.
Turn this party out.
know you want your body tonight. I'll be your naughty girl, all right. Calling all the girls. I see you, be up.